Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is a big week. We're bringing on the creators of Clutter, 5 Points, Josh, Miranda, and Jesse from Toy Pizza gets in there and talks all things toys, the beginning of Clutter, the beginning of 5 Points Fest, and where they are headed this year in a new venue, new setting, still the same vibes. If you want more Toys on Tap, like, follow, rate, review. It's free for you. It helps us so much, and we will kiss you on the face for it. If you want to support Toys on Tap even more, follow on all socials at Toys on Tap. And if you want to jump on even more, patreon.com/toysontap. That's where you get episodes of the Nitty Gritty. You get behind the scenes stuff and any extra stuff that we produce will go there. Any new toy news, all that stuff. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. I'm pumped that you guys are all here. If you haven't listened to an episode of Toys on Tap, we really just dive into the history of the artist, and now you guys are the target audience and the target people. So let's start by introducing us to you, what you do, and how long you've been doing it.
You go first, Miranda.
Okay. All right. Hello, I'm Miranda. I started Clutter as a magazine in 2004. Which was a million years ago now, as a way to shine a light on the amazing artists and collect, mainly artists, less so collectors at the time. It was really to focus on artists and the burgeoning scene that was designer toys back in the day. We were the first English language print magazine, and we were the longest running. And then I moved to America, and we started a gallery and all the rest of it. You want to introduce yourself, and then we can talk about it more?
I'm Josh Kimberg. I married into Clutter. I studied sculpture. And so for a long time, designer toys were kind of just like this ancillary thing that was happening out there that I really didn't think I was vibing with.
I kind of looked down upon it.
Like it wasn't really art, but I was secretly like collecting toys and holding to like everything that I'd ever had from when I was like 7 or 10, like and then also going to like weird little Hong Kong shops on 33rd Street and buying Sufubi when I didn't even really know what Sufubi was. And so then when Miranda and I got together, I was like, oh, look at all this stuff that I have in drawers that I've been collecting. And I sort of embraced art toys as the way of the future.
The way of life.
Yeah. So then we created the gallery in Beacon in 2011. And then in 2017, we started 5 Points Festival.
Let's see here. Well, brief little bio. In 2005, as my sort of college thesis, I did an exhibit called Subcultures, Art of the Action Figure, which dovetailed nicely into what Miranda was doing in the print world, this kind of fascination with this emerging market and design aesthetic that would be called the designer toys.
That's what my college dissertation was about too, Jesse. I didn't know that.
There we go.
My dissertation was about collecting and action figures and
a bunch of college nerds. Look at that.
Oh, look at
fast forward about 11 years ago, I was one of the co-hosts of Toy Pizza on YouTube, which was a, I like to say I'm a D-minus YouTube celebrity. And then about 10 years ago, I launched, with the help of many people, the Night of the Slice toy line, which is still going on to this day. And along the way, I've done a couple different exhibits at the Clutter Gallery for Knights of the Slice, working closely with Josh and Miranda. And now we're all intersecting all over again to bring people
all over each other.
We like to call what we like to call the Burning Man of toys.
Which is, I love to hear it. I love that there's a love and a passion behind it. And I, through all the interviews that we've done,
you don't get people all the time that have been around for as long. And so it's really cool to see that the longevity is there and the love hasn't faded. Okay, so we kind of left off a little bit. We're at 2017, the beginning of 5 points. Let's start there. Tell me why 5 points? Why did it start? What was the, like, the genesis there? All that.
Condensed version?
You need to do the condensed version.
No condensed. We're a podcast. I need it. Yeah.
Need the full story. Well, there were a few things happening at the same time. We were we did New York Comic Con for a very long time, and we had a giant booth at the begin at the real front of Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
And so we were like the first booth as you walked in there. And a few years we were like, 1 year we were Kid Robot and Clutter, the rest of the time we were just Clutter. And then the Design and Toy Awards, which we also started to honor the industry, became the Saturday night party of New York Comic Con, right?
And right up until they finally rented the Hammerstein Ballroom and let us do the Designer Toy Awards at the Hammerstein Ballroom, which wound up in a lawsuit because of Kevin Smith.
Yes.
because he went so late. And what's the guy's name? Jay.
Jason Mewes.
Yeah. Jason Mewes would not stop humping the air on stage.
Or talking.
And so it just like pushed the whole night into like, we went hours late and it went hundreds of thousands of dollars over budget and became a whole lawsuit.
Not for us, for them.
Yeah.
Not our fault.
But I think that was the last time that they were like, yeah, let's do the Designer Toy Awards with you.
Well, a few things happened after that that then pushed all the designer toys in the back of Comic Con.
That was mostly reaction. I thought that was more of a reaction to 5 points.
Today, yeah. Maybe.
Well, so then right around that time, we were invited to start thinking about having a home for the Designer Toy Awards with an awesome guy whose name is escaping me right now, who runs East Coast Comic Con. Mm-hmm. And so we went out to Jersey for the weekend as part of this, like, let's see how it goes session and to be part of this Jersey Comic Con. And along with us, we had created this like all-stars. Sorry, Jesse, we're boring you.
Just making notes. All-stars.
All-stars of Designer Toys. It was Ron English, Tara McPherson, Sucklord, Sucklord's underage girlfriend.
Rob Lamino. When he was Suburban Vinyl.
Right. And
there were a couple of other people there too.
So there's some really cool people and we were all having a great time. And then by Sunday, it was like, it was just crickets. There was no one gave a shit about Designer Toys.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave, go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
We were literally just sitting there, like, dying, and there was a liquor store across the street. Oh, and so the backstory to what I'm about to say is there was also simultaneously this other company that was trying to do something cool at Toy Fair and had organized a platform show.
First of all, they created their own platform
out of thin
in
air.
A bubble of nothing.
Like okay.
This
company,
which, you know, happens a few times. We have plenty of stories about that. But,
And so they curated this really awful, and I love all those guys, but it was an awful platform.
They'll admit it was awful.
Yeah, they lost a lot of money. Yeah. There's still somewhere someone's got a pallet of these really bad platform toys.
I can't remember what they were called.
Yeah, it was like a toilet bowl or something. And so it was like a poop. Everyone does a poop, right? It was like a honeycomb poop. Anyway, it doesn't matter. They were simultaneously doing this really terrible show at Toy Fair. And so
all these customizers that weren't customizers, the artists that just hadn't, like, were not toy people at all. So it was just
it was a train wreck of a show. Yeah. And they asked us to help and we kind of were like, you guys are crazy. So now back to the fast forward to East Coast Comic Con. It's Sunday. We're bored. There's a liquor store across the street. I go across the street. I get tequila, wine, you name it. I just come back. I'm like a hero. Like, let's get trashed. And we're immediately, you know, just three sheets to the wind. It's like noon.
It's a fun little fact in there.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So one of the guys from this other toy show walks up to us and he's like, hey, what are you guys doing here? And we're like, we're thinking about doing a toy show. He's like, we're thinking about doing a toy show too. We think we can do like an East Coast Designer Con kind of a thing. And we're like, you suck. I said to him, like, I'm like, you suck. If you try and do it without us, it's bullshit. You can't, like, you guys don't know what you're doing. And Miranda, as my wife, is usually not cool with me being an asshole when I'm drunk. But
also, yeah. British.
Also British, like reserved,
more British,
British, yeah. like don't get in anyone's face like that.
Yeah.
But on that day, she was drunk and she just kind of came over my shoulder and she was like, yeah, you suck. Like, you guys are whack. Like, you can't do it. And the guy was like, oh, all right. And he tried to like run away, like run down the aisle. And I chased after him. I was like, no, I'm serious. Like, you guys better not try and do a toy show because it's bullshit. And he was like, well, you should just leave me the fuck alone and call my boss. And he gave me his boss's phone number. And that was on Sunday. By Wednesday, we were signing contracts to create Five Points Festival with his company.
Right. But what we didn't know when we were giving him shit was that the owner of the company was actually the guy that started New York Comic Con for Reed Pop. He started Anime NYC. He was like, he knew what he was talking about.
He was in, like, the owner of that company was really like, he's a great guy. His name's Greg DePalion. He's a fantastic dude.
Yeah. They're all
so,
fantastic.
Yeah. So when we actually met with them, it was like, oh, we could do this for real. And so then we sat around and like, you know, if you want to know the genesis of the name, we were talking, like someone was like, oh, you should call it ClutterCon, or we call it like, you know, just another toy convention, or like, you know, all these different names. And finally I was like, well, you know, why is Coachella called Coachella? And it's like, well, because it's in the Coachella Valley. They're like, well, why don't we name it after where we're going to do it? So let's do it downtown Manhattan. And I think at that point, Gangs of New York was still like a relatively recent movie. And I was so up on like the Five Points and Daniel Day-Lewis being like, I close my fist and it's the five points. And so I was like, let's do it downtown Manhattan and call it Five Points. And everyone was like high-fiving, like, this is great. That's what we're going to do. We'll call it Five Points. Beautiful. It's like the logo created itself. It's the Gangs of New York logo.
Heck yeah. I mean, that's the best way to do it. Also, as a tagline for this, if anyone ever asks me, like, do you know anything about starting a show? And we say, yeah, tequila, wine, and rage. Those are the three.
There you go. Tequila, wine, and rage.
Disdain.
It works. Yeah, that company was called Left Field Media, and they were like this cute little boutique events company in Connecticut, where Reed is. And so they had like a few awesome little conventions that they'd already been running for a few years. They had Awesome Con, which was about 3 years old at the point, I think.
Yeah, DC.
Yeah. And so while we were creating the first Five Points, they got bought out by a big publicly traded company. And so they went from this little boutique, like, you know, pinball machines and scooters in the office to like headsets and corporate and like
boards and
giant tables full of people and with questions. Yeah,
and like from five employees to like, we're going to offices with like 100 people.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
There's something that feels terrible from going from scooters to headsets. I don't want that.
The other thing that was amazing about that first Five Points was like our mantra when we would all get together and discuss it at Left Field was like, let's just go around New York and pick up all the love that New York Comic Con has kicked to the curb.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we did. We like walked around, we called everyone, we're like, hey, do you hate New York Comic Con? We do too. You should come and be part of Five Points. And so we literally got Midtown Comics, which is like, they're the, you know, the gorilla in the comic scene. Mm-hmm. And they were like, okay, we're doing this. And they came on board. And so really it was Clutter and Midtown Comics.
Yeah, yeah.
It was actually like,
it was really heavy.
We weren't the only like name on the like
masthead
that first year, if you go back and look. And so we were in Manhattan that year, and it was a really beautiful, expensive venue, which wound up costing double, triple what the price was in the estimate.
We learned that you can't do it in Manhattan.
Yeah.
That was the biggest lesson.
If you're not going to go to Javits,
yeah,
you got to get out of Manhattan.
Yeah. So Jesse, at some point you get intertwined here. How many of Five Points Fest pass before you're locking in on this? Or are you in there from the beginning?
Well, let's see. I've known Josh Miranda for over a decade easily. Mm-hmm. Do you guys know? I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, we've always been talking. And you've always been really... And Jesse's always been instrumental and helpful in a lot of things that we've done. You know, we've always been friends, and then Jesse's brought us things over the years. And I don't know if, did you ever do 5 points?
I did it a few times, but
it must have been the first two.
Yes. I did definitely pre-COVID. I didn't do any shows after during COVID.
Right.
But also, like, you know, we had sort of we were always scheming on different things, non-5-point related. So if I had a new client, I would introduce them to Josh Miranda. I was, you know, I would bring them in to do a pitch meeting with whoever. Like, we were always kind of just tossing the football around and trying to all, you know, just make it big, I guess.
Right.
We made a toy with Hatsune Miku together.
Right, yeah.
Which was really weird, but fun.
Yeah, that's rad.
We tried to delve into the anime world for a hot minute.
Yeah, you know, pitched a bunch of old animation to Frederator.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Jumping into the anime world where they make the statues and stuff, and every woman has to look crazy in those statues. It's such a wild jump from the toys that I'm so used to. Yeah. And people have asked, like, hey, do you know factories? I don't know anyone that produces these things. I just imagine people find them.
They're just out there in the wild.
Yeah.
We learned a lot.
They grow on trees.
Yeah. We learned a lot about the difference between designer toy people and anime people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there are Venn diagrams where we overlap, but more than not, we're totally different animals.
Yeah. I get that. So tell me about the evolution, right? In the beginning, you have this comic book shop and you who are like linking arms and kind of trying to be the rebels and start something new and throw up the dust, if you will, so that people see something new. And you guys have been around for a while now. So how did it evolve over the years? I mean, coming off of year one, was it an immediate like, okay, we're going to do this again? Or did it take 6 months to like hype yourself back up?
No, well, the first year we had this major event company behind us. Mm-hmm. So they funded the whole thing. So we got a lesson in how to run a convention, you know, nuts and bolts, top to bottom, everything that we needed to know from fire regulations to legal stuff to, you know, how to market it, you name it. But as we said, they were bought out. So we got to the end of the first year and they were like, this was the most amazing festival. We've tried this with many different areas and it never vibes quite as well as this one did. You have the best collectors. It had the best vibe, mm-hmm. but we're not interested in growing a festival. We're only interested in buying conventions now. Yeah. So
they went from being this little tiny shop to literally having billions of dollars. And the other thing that we learned that first year was there's not a lot of crossover between designer toys and comic books.
Mainstream
comics. Mm-hmm. So after the first year, Midtown dropped out and went back to New York Comic Con.
Okay.
And we also tried to do New York Comic Con after that, and they pushed us all the way in the back into the loading dock.
Okay, I do have a question. I do have a question about that. I mean, was there an understanding that if you were picking up all the people that hated New York Comic Con, that if you went back, you were, of course, put in the back?
I think what's interesting about Comic Con is that the people never stay there. So you have like a couple of years cycle where you have somebody there that's your person and they're really into what you're doing and they advocate for you. And then they're all fired. And then a new comes in. And I think that that's probably one of the decisions in New York Comic Con.
Like, if we're going to have that conversation, there is what Miranda was just pointing to is this corporate amnesia.
Yeah.
And so not only were we picking up like the love that had been kicked away, but the people that we're working with now don't even know that people have been jettisoned. You know what I mean? Like the new people that are working at Reed that year don't know when you say like, it's like, hey, do you know Abraham? And they'll be like, no. And be like, oh, cool. You should invite him here. And it's like literally, they like threw you out last year, but these people don't know that they threw you out last year.
Kind of helpful.
So that level of corporate amnesia was so severe there because there were other versions of clutter running things prior to us that the people working there weren't even aware of. Like at New York Comic Con, it was always just comics. And then these two really interesting dudes, Jim Crawford and Jonathan Caffey. And I'm digging.
Like, Jim Crawford owns Strange Co. And okay. Jonathan Caffey owns
the Law of
Subjects.
So yeah. If you've seen that open letter to Trump, that was Jonathan Caffey. He's still around. He's deep in Walmart now.
Yeah.
But so back in the day, they like had teamed up and said, let's pitch a con within a con of designer toys to New York Comic Con. And we'll do this thing and it'll be called the Cult Yard.
Yeah.
And so the Cult Yard was the original con within a con, bringing toys.
That housed all the designer toys.
Right. And so everybody was at New York Comic Con in the Cult Yard. And the Cult Yard was really cool. Like there were like people, you know, they were getting press, like the news crews were coming out and interviewing people standing on the floor. Like there were years where it was like, it was a big deal that there was a Cult Yard. And that went on for maybe 2 years.
Two or three, but that was Jim and Jonathan.
That was Jim
and
Jonathan.
You didn't really interact with New York Comic Con. You interacted with Jim and Jonathan. That's what, like, that was their role.
And New York Comic Con gave Jim and Jonathan a contract that said, if at any point they chose to fire Jim and Jonathan, they could, and they would pay them a $25,000 fee and they would have to go away. But they weren't going to do that. They just wanted that as a clause in the contract.
Which means they were going to do it.
Literally, we're standing there with Jim. He signs the contract. The next day, Jim is still with us. He gets the phone call, you're fired.
Yeah.
It was the next day.
Jeez.
Crazy.
You're fired. Here's your check. Peace out. And they then...
Then it became the yard.
No, it became the block.
Oh, yeah.
It became the block.
All these names are pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the block was kind of like the cell block. So for a while, it was the block. And so we were in the block, and then the block just really kind of had a bad rep because people were like, what happened to Jim and Jonathan?
Yeah.
And so there was this like mind eraser moment where it was like, what happened? It was like, and then new people came into New York Comic Con and they were like, what's the block? Mm-hmm. So you had a new wave of employees at Reed who are like, what is this? Why is this even here? And we were standing there going, well, we can explain it to you. And so the more we explain it, the more they're like, you guys should run this. And we were like, okay. And so then we became the like face of the block, which was totally just corporate amnesia. Cause we're literally talking to Jim and Jonathan going like, we're so sorry, but this is messed up, but you're going to try and help. And then at some point your Comic-Con let us blow up to a certain point. And then we were like, we hit the wall.
Corporate America does not care about artists or art.
Oh no.
And none of those conventions are home for us or any of the artists that we work with, really. It's not. They are only interested when it's in fashion, and that's every four or five years it's in fashion and it's collectible and it's hype and they care. And then when it's on the downside and it's not so hype, then they don't care.
And if you could call Jim Crawford right now and get him to talk about toys, he's probably he's heartbroken.
Probably about the he
has so many stories of like getting screwed over by corporations, because he got screwed over. The MoMA took down Strange Co.
The
Museum of Modern Art in Manhattan took down Strange Co. by like burning them on a license. It's like all the this is Toy Confidential.
Yeah, that's Toy Confidential, but to the masses.
We try not to tell too many of these stories publicly because it just sort of like ruins the illusion for the fans. And honestly, we want people, the great thing about designer toy collectors is they inherently want to discover something new. They want to find something they've never seen before. They want to walk into a room and be like, oh my God, what's that? What is that? And you go like, it's this thing I made. And they go like, oh my God, it's incredible. It's blowing my mind. Completely different than a different kind of collector who's walking and going like, oh my God, I love Batman. Check out that Batman.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, this whole shelf, right.
Batman too. And I love Batman and I love Superman, and I'm not really into anime personally, but like, it's the same thing for anime people. They're like, oh my God, check out that Hatsune Miku. I love Hatsune Miku. Whereas like designer toy people are like, what is that? I need that. Oh my God, it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. You're like, that's a page, that's Immune Vinyl Hardcore, that's a toy piece, like that's a Knights of the Sights, like who made this? And this is Ziggy,
sorry. Yeah,
I'm a dog person. Don't ever apologize for this.
he's whining behind
please,
us
please let me lick you to death. Okay.
Yeah. Jesse, at some point in this, did you encounter this kind of stuff? Because this is the beginnings when they're about to pull away and start 5 points. Were you encountering this kind of stuff all around as well?
Well, I think during this time I was working on the other side of the fence in the licensing industry. So I worked for different movie studios. I got started at New Line Cinema working on Lord of the Rings. So for me during this period, toy making or selling my own ideas and stuff like that was kind of a weekend fancy. You know, I had this relatively structured, relatively corporate job, but one that kind of was on the other end of those exchanges, you know, like doing licensing deals or putting together deals for product and things like that. Have I, in the course of my career, probably caused a couple Strange Co-esque meltdowns or bankruptcies? Oof. Who's to say, right? but I do feel like, you know, it's given me a unique perspective because I understand how the corporate side works from the inside. And I also have always had this artistic calling. And there's a reason why I've, you know, it's going on probably at least 15 years that I haven't had any corporate clients or any corporate work because, you know, it does, it takes its tally, you know, it does chip away at your soul. You know, at a certain point I decided I'm better off just being a starving artist or, you know, whatever, than kind of having to make decisions like the things that lead to something like Strange Co. being, you know, pulled under.
Yeah. There is a consolation prize, I think, for artists that might get burned by people to also know that on the other side, the professional side, you're also not as happy as you could be, right? Like, we're all unhappy coming at the same thing. It's good to know that there's unhappiness for them as well as they're about to crap on us.
Very, I mean.
Yeah, but they do also, they hold all the power also. So it's not exactly a.
They do.
I mean, a lot of the stories of these corporate interactions are with good people.
Yeah.
Like the hatchet man on a lot of these was like a good dude or a nice woman, you know. You know, we were like going out to dinner, having a good time, having drinks, getting to know each other, then getting the phone call. I have to like, you know, slit your throat. Like, yeah. I'm sorry, I like you. You're done.
Yeah.
It's the.
So you guys get to a point, you hit the wall, and all of a sudden it's like, now what? And so this is the step, right?
When we hit the wall at New York Comic Con, then we went and we did 5 points with Left Field.
Okay.
Left Field then immediately gets bought by Clarion, which is like a massively funded version of Reed from also in the, I think they were UK based.
I think
they're originally UK based.
They were like, this is amazing. You should keep doing it. We don't have an interest in growing it, but you should do it. So they sold it back to us for $1.
And said,
you know, anything you need. Well,
they gave us a choice as well. They're like, you can stay.
That's
true. Like, you can stay with us and we'll keep funding you, but you need to either leave the five boroughs. They're like, you can go to DC, you can go to Boston, you can go to Long Island.
But you can't
be in the five boroughs because there's no future. There's no metric where we become profitable in the five boroughs, given your philosophical agenda for having a good time.
Yeah, that's true.
And so we were like, all right, we're gonna try. We're gonna go beat our heads against the wall in Brooklyn on our own. And they were like, we love you. You can call us anytime you want. And we're like, we're gonna go to Brooklyn and do it.
So I guess we're testing out that theory this year, I suppose, right?
Yeah. And honestly, what, you know, before we made the decision to go to Beacon, I called Greg Topalian this year and I said, hey, we're kind of like hitting that wall you told us that we were always going to hit in Brooklyn, where we've kind of gotten as big as we can get.
There's no space that's big enough without going to Javits, which is then the next level. And the only way to sustain being in somewhere like Javits is to be pop culture, which is not what we want to be. And also the limits of being in Manhattan are insane. The things that you cannot do.
And the limits of being in Brooklyn are insane.
Yeah.
You mean Brooklyn?
In both. In both.
Like we were hitting
Manhattan's worse.
Sure, Manhattan's worse, but we hit the wall in Manhattan immediately. It took us 5 or 6 years to hit the wall in Brooklyn.
Oh, can I just say a really funny thing about the first year in Manhattan is that we always have this like bar element because we want people to be able to drink and have a good time. So we always have a bar and we partner with like breweries and things. And the first year, because we did it on the Lower East Side, it was run by the mafia. Like legitimately run by the mafia, and we didn't see a dollar for it, but we got haloed for being allowed to do it.
Yeah, to have the bar in that location, we went to many afternoon dinners at these Italian restaurants in Little Italy, owned by the families. Mm-hmm. And they were like, okay, this is how we're going to do it. This is the beer.
Oh, obviously never went. I wasn't allowed to go. For the record, that was not
it sounds more peaceful when you say dinners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not shakedowns or like
it's like dinner. You know, it's 2 or 3 in the afternoon and we're having like stuffed clams and veal and like we're eating and we're drinking. I'm honestly I threw up once because I drank with cappuccino and then they started serving beer and then I drank all this beer on top of cappuccino and I was like, we're driving back to Beacon and I was like throwing up. Anyway, that was year one.
Right. And then when we moved it to Brooklyn, we had an amazing venue. And if that venue was still there, we would probably still be in Brooklyn because it was perfect. It was like the perfect size. It had an indoor, outdoor, but times are not the same. Things happened. COVID happened. That venue went out of business and is now a kids ninja training warrior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sponsored by White Claw.
Yeah. Sponsored by White Claw.
Unreal. Unreal.
Oh, yeah. So we were there for like 3 years in that venue. Yeah, and that venue was awesome.
That venue was awesome.
And then we moved to Zero Space, which we love Zero Space. We love the guys there. But it's not in a great part of Brooklyn. It's difficult to get to. There's nothing there. There's no outdoors. You're stuck in this like old warehouse. And we filled every corner of it. And it just wasn't big enough. Like we couldn't fit any more in there than we could. And we couldn't achieve a festival environment. All we could do was put people in there to sell toys, which is not our vibe. It's only part of what we want to achieve.
Yeah.
And other venues were more expensive and just as limited.
Mm-hmm.
And
so there isn't really a space for us that's the right size that can allow us to do live painting and experience
until one faithful lunch at Meyer's Old Dutch Burgers.
That's right.
Between me and Josh.
That's right. So we were, we kind of hit this wall in last year, 2024. Mm-hmm. Like we just weren't getting the foot traffic. And then Jesse and I went out for hamburgers, as we do.
And as one does.
One does. And Jesse like just took control of my brain. I could make the joke.
Like, why are you going to get back in your head against this brick wall?
Well, it was like a come to reality moment where it was like, what's important here? Like, are we about appearing to be cool? Or are we about actually fulfilling our dreams of what we want to do and what we want to have and what we want to be? And I just sort of like, my brain just melted. And I was like, I don't think I want to go back to Brooklyn. Like that's really, really what it is. Like
walking back 2 years as we kind of talk about the idea of not wanting to go back to Brooklyn.
Can we do this once a month and talk about stuff? Cause this is like therapeutic.
Dude. Absolutely. I have spent 4 years doing with this and I will like, as a pause side thing, there have been episodes where people are crying. I end up crying and it's like, what are we doing here?
So I'm into this. This is great.
If you walk me back 2 years from this year, the ins and outs of doing all kinds of convention stuff, like not something I ever want to know. However, there are indicators as you go where you can see the wall approaching. What are some of those indicators about 2 years ago? And then what really pointed to like, we're done here?
There's a couple of things I think. the economy,
rising prices,
rising prices, and the economy was the biggest thing. And so why would somebody come to a convention if they couldn't afford to buy when they got there is the first thing. Then ticket sales.
That was the crushing takeaway from last year. Mm-hmm. It was like, where did the people go? And it's like, well, why would you? God, as like Miriam just said, why would I buy a ticket to go to Five Points if I can't afford any of the toys?
Right.
And so that was
the hotels nearby.
Yeah, exactly. And
I can buy it online anyway.
Right. Mm. And space isn't in like this sexy neighborhood where there's, you know, you want to hang out and there's all these great hotels. And the hotels there were bonkers expensive.
Yeah.
In the middle of Brooklyn. So
if I could paint a picture to answer your question, if we go back to the expo center, imagine like we're standing outside, it's the four of us, there's a four top, Miranda's got a sangria, I've got a beer, Jesse's got a something,
the wind is blowing through your hair,
unsweetened green tea,
and on one side there's like eight people spray painting and laughing, and there's a DJ playing, and there's food trucks, and people are standing around eating, and we're standing here laughing, and we're looking inside, and people are transacting. So there's like this whole area where people are like having the market, where, you know, people are, you know, showing the toys, and there's people doing it, and we're all friends, and we're just like flowing, and we're getting drunk, and the sun is shining, and there's like all this cool stuff going on, and we're literally having just a fantastic day. And I don't want this day to end. We're laughing. We all have the same interests, right? Fast forward to now we're in, and we're outside. It's this beautiful day. Fast forward to now we're standing inside this giant 60,000 square foot photo studio, which is really what Zero Space is. And we're all kind of standing in one room. And so in one corner of the room, there are people transacting. In another corner of the room, there's people getting tattooed. In another corner of the room, there's people spray painting. We're standing and having a beer. And it's like, there's like the smell of humanity in the air. That's not sunshine. Mm-hmm. And we're like, I as the organizer, am thinking to myself, I don't know why anybody would come here for a second day. Mm. 'Cause like, this is like a cruise ship from hell.
Cruise ship.
I think also
offense to Zero Space probably, to us or anybody who had a good time, but like, sorry, Jesse, go ahead.
I think also, you know, along somewhere around this time, Josh Miranda had always been coming to my little small Toy Pizza Expo. And right. I think probably last year or the year before, they came and they got to see the event at our current venue, The Yard. And I think that, you know, at one point I looked out and they were sitting under a tree drinking beer and eating, you know, a sausage roll or sushi or something. And their kids are running around with other kids from the neighborhood. And again, vibe, right? Like there was this beautiful day happening. For some people, it was the best day of their lives. And it was just like blissful, you know? And I think that experience probably informed or provided some contrast to, you know, what the show had become for you guys, and, you know, probably helped us kind of move in this direction of working together.
Absolutely.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, I think you guys are describing something that we all chase, right? Like there's a difference between drinking at 11 a.m. at a dive bar or at sunset at an outdoor brewery. And one of those is definitely better.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you're describing this thing, which by the way, when I talk to other people that are like describing their opinions of DesignerCon or Assembly Required or whatever, they don't have the same passion that I'm hearing now of, we just want to curate a vibe rather than a toy space. Like there's something else at play here, which I applaud you guys for, like, holy moly. Sorry, keep going.
I'm just gonna say that you can buy online, so what's the point of going to a convention? Actually,
we interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures,
DOV-2, we have an engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV-2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
In 2025, what is the benefit of standing in a room and transacting over a table when you can buy the exclusives online? If they don't sell online, you can buy them on, if they don't sell at the convention, you can buy them online. Like the whole experience has been stripped away. And that's what makes it fun. And that's what makes people collect. People don't collect because they saw something online. That's not how they started collecting.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, to build off what Miranda said, and I am repeating myself a little bit here, if people are following our media appearances, but the transaction and the commerce aspect is not on the forefront of our mind. And we don't want that to be on the forefront for the people that attend the show. We just have faith that people are going to buy stuff anyway if they're in a great environment. But we are way more concerned with, like, let's be outside. Let's have fresh air. Let's have sunshine. Let's have multiple bandstands where there's live music. Let's have incredible artisanal local food purveyors. Let's have a tattoo parlor in this gorgeous refurbished townhouse. Like, everything. We're thinking so much more about every single aspect, every sense that you have. Like, how do we stimulate all of that? Way more than we're thinking about, like, what is the signature exclusive that, as Miranda said, it'll be available at the show and then inevitably will be on somebody's website and be on eBay and be in the secondary market. Like, I think we've seen an explosion of cons over the past couple of years. I think, you know, the pandemic kind of stymied that, but then, like, every weekend there was a new con. And I think that's starting to die down because it's not special. And all of those cons, the thing they have in common is just, it's a transaction. You line up, you're in a cement building, there's fluorescent lights, there's, you know, a stale hot dog and a bag of chips at concessions if you're lucky, filthy bathrooms. Like, why would people subject themselves to that?
And also, where's the inspiration in that too? All these artists didn't create these toys going to, like, basement conventions. They're all inspired by music and connection and all the different conversations and all the things that they love, whether it's TV shows or comic books or, you know, a million different things. So it's, how do you bring all of those thoughts together too?
Yeah, I think parts of, like, what happened, and I think to speak on your point of, like, the explosion of cons, anytime a convention moves, there's this, like, vacuum that forms, and everyone has the idea, myself, I've had the idea of, like, we should start something. We've got to fill this void. And then you have six or seven that jump up, and they're not big enough or strong enough, or they don't understand, and it can't fill it. It just fills a weekend. And so it's like you have all these big ones at play, and so it wouldn't surprise me that now that you guys are moving, six or seven are just going to try to, like, rise up.
Yeah. But what's.
Let them try.
Yeah, absolutely. Because what it is people also think that they can make money doing it. And the number one lesson in designer toys is there is no money in designer toys. And there's no money in throwing a convention around it. Like, absolutely not. If you don't do this because you love it, then don't fucking do it. Like, right. Don't do it thinking I'll throw a convention in Brooklyn and I'll make all this money. Bullshit. Like, the venues are $60,000. The security is $15,000. The pipe and drape and the tables is another $15,000. So now it's $150,000 to walk into a convention center. Like, all right, so where are you getting that money from to start with? And then you've got to get the vendors there. And then you get the vendors there, but now where are your ticket sales? Oh, nobody's coming. So now no one's coming to your event again. So now, like, it's a vicious cycle and it's not easy. So everybody should just do what they love. And if they want to create an event that they love and bring their friends out, great, they should do that. But don't think it's easy, because it's absolutely not.
Yeah. Take me back to Burger Day.
Burger Day. Actually,
yeah.
If you'll allow me, I would like to do a thought exercise for the audience at home and for yourself, Abe. So close your eyes. You you're on the Metro North train, okay? And you made the correct choice of sitting on the left-hand side. So you're seeing the Hudson River. Yes. And it's gorgeous. It's picturesque. And as you get closer to Beacon, you see a goddamn sunken castle in the middle of the Hudson River. This is an omen of a spectacular day that's going to befall you. You pull into Beacon Station and you start walking towards Main Street. And along the way to the yard, you're going to stop off at Happy Valley, a retro arcade. You're going to have a drink there. You're going to stop off, have a burger, have a slice of pizza, wherever you like. You're going to stop at any of our satellites along the way. You're going to walk past a beautiful restored movie theater that happens to be programmed by us. That's going to be showing old Godzilla films as well as David Lynch's Dune, which I insisted upon. You're going to move further up. You're going to walk past the waterfalls along the railroad track. You're going to get to the yard. It's going to be this easy, free portion of the show at the community kitchen. You're going to go in there. You're going to learn about how the yard and how we collectively feed the community for free. You're going to be able to donate to that. You're going to be able to like make these positive waves in the local community. You're going to walk up a little bit to the townhouse. You're going to get yourself a tattoo. You're going to have the sting of fresh ink on your arm. Then you're going to walk over to the wood fire pizzas that are being made. Oh, I have a gluten allergy. I have a dairy allergy. No problem, buddy. We got a separate kitchen that's going to cater to both those needs. I know I'm annoying like that too. Then you're going to hear music in the air. You're going to walk through the tents and through the beer garden, and you're going to be drawn to this bandstand where these amazing local artists and DJs are going to play. And then finally, maybe you're like, hey, I got a few dollars on hand. Why don't I go and see what these artists are all about and how can I spread this around and, you know, make their dreams come true and make sure they have a good day. And you're going to see art and creations and things that you just have never seen before. And you're going to interact with the people that make them. And all that is kind of
beautiful mountains in the background.
Jeez. And the beautiful Mount Beacon in the background. This is it. This is.
And you're an hour and a half outside of the city.
Yeah. Hour and a half. Hour and change.
Yeah. All right. So am I going? What are we doing here?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're there.
Yeah. We should. Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
I say all that to kind of illustrate this is not standing in a queue in Midtown Manhattan waiting for your badge to get in to fight crowds to get the one or two things you and your friends need to then quickly exit or hide out in, you know, a concession area. This is like the opposite of that. This is the anti-con in many respects.
I will say that like going to these conventions and stuff, I never come back saying like, God, the lighting was 30% better this year. Right. Like the tablecloths were Egyptian cotton this year. I don't care about any of that, but I care about the conversations that I'm having with artists and the people that will stop me along the way and say like, I listen to your podcast. It's like, I'm sorry, like, don't do that to yourself. Like, but like we to have all those conversations and see people that I see once, maybe twice a year. The curation of that is the part that's missing from every large convention. And that's the hub. That is everything. That's the reason I go.
Right. It's the vibe versus the commerce reality of those bigger shows though. You know, once you're in a bigger show, it's what I was talking about before. Once your expenses are so high that you have to just fill the space with vendors and it doesn't really matter. You're not considering who you're putting in there or why. You just have to fill the space because you have to make the line. And that becomes really difficult. That becomes watered down pop culture. And that's okay if that's what you like, but not if you want to experience something new and different and find your community. Like, I think that's what everybody's lacking now. You know, it's all social media and online purchasing, but why we all love this so much, part of the reason is because of the community and finding all the friends that we know and that we love and that we've known for a million years who also love the same stuff.
There have been other amazing venues. Like, we don't think this is like, like we've discovered, it's not rocket science, like we've invented something. Pasadena. Designer Con,
amazing.
When it was at Pasadena, I remember because we have we had 5 points and I would go to Pasadena and I'd be like, we could never be as cool as Pasadena.
Yeah.
Like yeah. That was the best. It was beautiful.
I agree 100%. Weather.
Yeah.
Everybody was in the room. Like when it was just like those three halls, it was like A, B, and D or C and D, whatever, four halls. It was like there were, you know, 1,000, well, I don't know how many vendors, it was 300 vendors. And it was like, those were the 300 vendors in the world. Those were like, there was no one out. There was no one missing.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was there. Mm-hmm. And right outside was there was a mall across the street with palm trees and a gyro and a burger. Mm-hmm. It was fucking gorgeous and it was great. And so
there just aren't many places that you can replicate. Yeah,
and then
vibe.
You know, what was it? America's Got Talent was like, you're done.
Yeah, there's always something that comes in.
Or it was all the rich people from JPL were like, we don't like these weirdos.
Yeah.
At our theater once a year.
You know, there's also room for a lot of different shows in a lot of different areas too. And, you know, collectors can travel and get around and go to all of them. And that's what makes it cool. And let's go back to more in-person events and go to all the shows and support everybody and make it just a big, awesome time. Like,
yeah, I think that's the part that matters a lot. I think the shows that happen in like breweries and stuff, that's why they're so enticing. Because there's something that gets held there. Like the dream event is like where you don't know that you've walked the entire event 12 times because of the conversation you're having with the people around you.
Yes.
Exactly.
It's way more about that.
It's about the vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me, we're bringing it up to this year. We are at the Hamburger State. And yeah, I love the tail. Honestly, the animal thing, I'm here for it. We're getting hamburgers and we're talking about the next thing and the next iteration of what this is going to be. Kind of walk me through that process. And then we're going to jump into everything that's about to be happening this year. So tell me about this conversation.
I think the remarkable thing from that conversation, how we followed up, was that we were still envisioning, my cat is now pushing the laptop. Jesus.
Our dog needs back into.
We were still envisioning two separate shows, so Toy Pizza Expo and 5 Points. I just really loved working with the yard, and I thought that 5 Points would be meaningful there, especially because Josh and Miranda live here in town.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until like we sat down to like really talk numbers with the venue where both the venue and Josh and Miranda were like, why are you doing this on a separate weekend? Why don't we just do this all together? And I really had not thought very much about that. I just always imagined these were kind of two separate things. So, you know, we kind of went from the burgers to meeting and sitting down with the yard, everybody getting along, and then the decision to kind of combine our efforts and make this into one great big show.
Right. I mean, what also is interesting about Beacon is that it is an art town. It's what solidified it. It has a big international museum here called the Dia. Ron English lives here. The Chapel of Sacred Mirrors, which is Alex's Gray's museum to himself, is just down the road. Like, it's amazing. It's just got so much, you know, art and inspiration in this area. The Storm King is a big sculpture garden. There's so much here in this area that we also want to find the next collectors and pull in new people. And, you know, it gets very stagnant and stale after all. So it's like, how do you inject new interest? And so I think moving it up here is a good way to do that.
And there's a lot of weirdos.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
We have got great food. And everyone who, you know, we had our gallery on Main Street here in Beacon for the last 14 years. And every single time an artist would come into town to show at the gallery, the conversation would inevitably wind up at, oh my God, I should move here.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, this is the spot.
I mean, there's a reason why on Netflix right now, Tina Fey's new show, 4 seasons, filmed in Beacon on Main Street, because it is like a Hollywood set. It is a beautiful, picturesque place. And you can't help but walk up and down Main Street and feel at home. This was my very experience. I would come from the city up to Beacon to go camping, glamping, really. And, you know, after being up on the mountain, I would go and eat, you know, Beacon Main Street. I'd go to the flea market. And I was like, I've never felt more at peace anywhere than I do right here. And, you know, it took me a few years, but my mind was made up. I made the transition.
Yeah.
I think people's priorities have changed too.
And if we climbed over the fence in the backyard, we'd be at Ron English's house.
It's true.
We're doxing Ron English tonight.
Yeah. Exclusive. It's honest. That was the first time that we really came to Beacon, was to go to dinner at Ron's house. And we're like, this is amazing here. It's such a cool town.
So kind of set up what it's like functionally going to look like, what the vendors are going to be, that's
so
going to be.
Close your eyes. You're on the Metro North. You're sitting on the left-hand side. You're looking at the Hudson River. There's a castle.
Harvey Weinstein.
No, but somebody did write an email today complaining about moving it from Brooklyn and being like, it's.
No, he wouldn't write. No, he wrote. It was great. Let me read it.
I hope they're listening. They're listening.
I need to hear this.
Okay. So Miranda texted me this at 4:30 this afternoon.
Yeah.
Someone emailed us. It might as well be bacon. That blows, dude. I'm used to the Brooklyn vibe.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1.18 inch 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSONTAP 10. Empire Blisters.
It's a pain. And it's expensive to get out there. Hopefully next year, you guys will come back to your senses and bring it back where it truly belongs. Remember that old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Your response is like 70,000 words long.
If I may, may I field this? I would love to field this as your PR.
Yeah, and then I'll tell you what I
asked. So there, like, I think people's initial reaction when they have a negative feeling about the show moving is the commute that they imagine, right? But flying into Newark or JFK or LaGuardia, it can take you about an hour and a half to get to certain parts of Brooklyn, even though you're a few miles away, right? So in the same amount of time,
yes.
You can take AirTran to Metro North and be
up here
in the same amount of time.
Yes,
to a much that more beautiful outdoor area.
I was like, a cab across Brooklyn is an hour and a half, which is longer than the train to here. And that cab will cost you $60 or $70, and the train will cost you $20. So that argument is nonsense.
And then if you just want to talk about the insane cost of hotels and the comparison, it's like it's such a made up argument somebody's having with themselves, because this is fundamentally so much more affordable to attend and so much easier to navigate because of what a mess sort of mass transit is within New York City. I lived in Queens for many years, which was only 12 minutes away from LaGuardia, and it would oftentimes take me an hour to get home. But 12 minutes, no traffic. But if you hit rush hour or you land, like I was taking red eyes a lot, insane. Like,
that's
just
why we
no concept of that's why how things flow here.
It would take us 45 minutes to drive from Manhattan to Brooklyn at 4 o'clock in the morning. I used to own a bar in Hell's Kitchen. It would take us 45 minutes to go from Hell's Kitchen to the Navy Yard, which is, if you look on a map, like 2 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
45 minutes at 4 o'clock in the morning. Can I paint you that specific picture that you're asking for? I'm happy to answer.
Absolutely. Also, from you reading the email or however it got, I think it feels like I know who you're talking about based off of that. Wild.
Yeah.
It's because so many people are like, why? And it's like, just come.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Think about it as like a vacation. Like, I'm going to go away for the weekend. I'm going to have a great time. I'm going to go to this festival. I'm going to listen to some music. I'm going to play some toys.
So, there's there's so much space where we're doing this that I've been able to say yes to all kinds of crazy requests that I would not have been able to say yes to. We have a vendor that's like, can I play a movie in my booth? I'm like, absolutely, you can play a movie in your booth. I have an artist who's like, can I build gigantic TV installations that like where it we can take toys and put the toys in my installation or project it on like on 30 televisions from the 70s? And I'm like, yeah, go ahead. Like,
wild.
Because there's just sort of like endless space. It's like we can just keep spreading out where we're
can
doing
we
this.
Have real spray paint? We can have,
yeah. So yes. And it was like, can we have another tattoo parlor? Absolutely, we can have another tattoo parlor. There's plenty of room. So this year we have Good Luck NYC, we have Honorable Ink, we have Distortion Society. Those are our three tattoo parlors. We have beer from Industrial Arts with awesome collector cans with, you know, artists that everyone knows and loves. We have live painting. So we've got the paint fight that we always do, but this time we can spread out. We can have even more painters and we can have real spray paint. And it's going to be happening within the confines of the actual market where everyone is hanging out. We're going to have food trucks.
We have
many food.
Yeah, on the food tip, do you know that famous viral video of the watermelon salesman of India where they're just screaming and smashing watermelons?
You mean my favorite video that I've watched?
Guys.
Yeah.
We got all those guys. They will be there.
All those guys.
Have you seen the one where they're making Indian food with their feet? We have those. Guys. No.
Yeah. So with gross.
I'm joking. But so
peanut butter baby? We got peanut butter baby. Peanut butter baby has a dunk take this year.
So in the last few years, we've been to Five Points. If we managed to have two food trucks in Brooklyn, we were like winning. It was a nightmare in Brooklyn at food trucks. Yeah. We're going to have five, the six, seven different kinds of food.
Don't think about when starting a convention. Getting food trucks is not an easy task.
It is not an easy task at all.
I think they'll turn up. They may say yes and then not turn up.
So we're going to have a whole pantheon of food trucks. And this year, we're actually going to have a band shell with bands, music, DJs, yeah, live music all day. And it's such a big venue that we're not worried about the like cross current of like, am I going to be able to sell while the music's going on? Am I going to be able to hear? It's like, dude, the music's going on over there. If you want to smoke a joint and drink a beer and go listen to the music, that's over there. So it's really a festival vibe. It's going to be
which
totally
we've been trying to figure out since day one, how to like put a musical element in, not just the DJ.
And then we have gigantic tents.
Yeah. Everyone's covered. Everyone is either under their own tent or in a big tent or in a medium sized tent. There's like lots of different tents. There's an indoor area.
Yeah. So it's just going to be awesome. Oh, and then of course, once the sun starts to go down, we'll have bonfires and bloody burlesque. We're going to have a chick with a covered in metal with a grinder and she's like naked with like metal and she's gonna be grinding like
that was the selling point.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
I will say that you're solving, like, as you're talking, you're solving issues that I have spotted at other places, right? There's nothing more annoying to me than when I'm trying to talk to an artist and the DJ is so loud in the damn room that
that's
I can't even hear it. Right.
That was Five Points 2024.
Oh. It's so loud. And you're like, no, I need him. I want to talk to this guy. You're, yeah.
Oh, and the DJ from last year is the most awesome dude.
We love
fucking
him.
Fucking love him. Mr. Sinister, you're the shit. You're fantastic. He's a turntablist. He's like an old school dude.
That's great.
And, but
every time we like turn it down.
To his credit and to his detriment, he was like wasted and we'd be like, turn it down. And then and he'd be like, yeah, but have you heard this song?
Yeah. I think
same as every DJ.
Yeah. And the issue is like, no convention hall is made for the acoustics of a DJ set while conversations are happening.
Exactly.
And like with the food, I think that you're solving that with having so many different food things and then having there.
Can I throw one other thing in there?
Yeah. Yeah.
The pass, with the Five Points pass, you can leave the festival ground and go eat somewhere else and get a discount because you've got a Five Points pass.
Yeah.
So you can go to a different venue, you know, a different restaurant, Beacon, and still get like, oh, I'm going to get the slice of pizza for 10% off because I got a Five Points pass. Or it's like, you know what? I just want to go to the Dia because I've decided I don't care about designer toys at all. And it's like, well, the D is half off because I've got my 5 points passed. I'm just going to go look at some amazing international art. Yeah. So like we really tried to bring in the whole.
There's also Hudson Valley Brewery, which is like world-class sour beers, and they are amazing. Yeah, so
it's we'll have on our,
we will have them at our venue, but you can also go to their brewery. Like,
yeah,
that's rad.
Sour beer?
I don't really drink because I'm allergic to beer. Oh. Now, tequila, I'm all for.
Right. We have distilleries too, so we're good. We can cover everything.
I think the thing that is really tough too, and I people don't keep this in mind a lot of times, but with more space, you can inadvertently keep it in mind. So with DesignerCon moving to Vegas, there's a lot of broken people that make toys, a lot of ex-addicts, a lot of like, and you're taking us to Sin City to then say like, hey, be careful after the show's done, but like, welcome.
But
and so we're like all closed in. There's everything's everywhere, but the bigger the space, you can be in your own space and like still do what you love and like be safe about. And I think that you guys are accomplishing that with having this new space, which I admire a lot. There's so many people that I get nervous for when they go to DesignerCon in Vegas. It's like, good luck, man. If you fall off the wagon, you call me and I'll show up. But yeah, you guys are killing it.
We hope so.
Like, as we kind of finish this out, describe the actual setup and where, like, how artists will be, and then dates and times and all that stuff.
A couple of things that I failed to mention because they're so just like part of the background of Five Points. One of the things that we always do is really try and focus on the vendor experience. Mm-hmm. So as always, coffee and water for the vendors is free.
Mm-hmm. Wi-Fi is free this year.
And if you're shipping to the venue, you just ship it to us. We bring it when you get to your booth. Your stuff is at your booth, mm-hmm. no charge. Like we're always just trying to keep the vendor. So all that stuff kind of goes without saying. It's June 7th and 8th, Saturday and Sunday. And we just announced today that our exclusive toy is with Mutant Vinyl Hardcore. If you're a fan of Sufubi, Neo Kaiju, you know, fucking Monstrous Insanity, like this, these are the most amazing toys.
Very excited.
And it's 4 different toys and they glow in the dark. And so you'll get one of the four. And then there's going to be like this massive, like trading, swapping thing going on at 5 points.
Unreal.
Really excited.
I mean, I think it's pretty lucky that we actually decided to do this at the time that we decided to do it, because then all the tariffs were introduced and everything got crazy. So the convention space this year is going to look different for everybody. And nobody's going to walk into a convention this year where it looks like every convention that they've ever been to, because it's just a different world. So I think that we made the right shift at the right time.
Yeah.
It just makes me think of Jean-Paul Sartre, and when he said, "L'enfer sont les huttes, s'il vous plaît, café à l'anger avec sucre," which I think really like better informs kind of what Miranda was saying.
Yeah. You want a coffee with sugar? Please.
Thank you.
I don't speak French. I don't actually know what he was saying. I don't speak French.
That is cool. I'm excited to see how this plays out. I think that the cool part about the three of you doing this or having hands in this and is that you guys are also artists as a whole. There's nothing worse than someone that's not an artist trying to do something for an artist, because you don't have the same
those people.
And so it's like, as you are doing this, you have the things that you're keeping in mind, and that's really helpful. And there's so many stressors. I mean, we talked ad nauseum before this, before you guys got on, Jesse and I were just talking about tariffs and all kinds of things. And the reality is that like the world is caving in on artists, and doing this full time is going to get harder and harder till it's impossible. And so if I can go to a place where at least those things are forgotten about for a weekend, even though they really still exist, then it makes that place that much more worth it for me. And so I think that you guys are creating that space.
Awesome. Are you going to come?
Here's the sad thing. I'm flying in from Belize on the 7th. So if I can get a flight from the 7th and red eye to New York and then fly back for work on Monday.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
Belize is great. Belize is a beautiful, beautiful place. Beautiful.
And
country.
So the hard part is like, if we're already saying it's hard for toy artists sometimes to make money when they go to conventions, I am a podcast. So I'm like a step, like it's harder for me to justify doing that. And so I have to, like, this sounds like something, if I was in town, this sounds like something I would go to.
Yeah.
But there are so many other conventions that I probably will never, like.
Let's just cut that whole part out, huh?
Yeah. There's so many. Yeah.
Say, yeah, I'll be there.
I'm going there. Yeah. There's other conventions that I'll just never step foot in because it's like, you're just another convention to me. And if I want to see that one, I'll go to one that's closer to me. Right. It's a 45 minute flight to Vegas and I can fly in, fly out. No big deal. But this one sounds different and the passion behind it feels different. So this is what's enticing about this one. This is the year that I'm starting to table and stuff. And the further conventions that I end up going to next year will just be, I'm there just for media. I'm going to bring a camera person with me and we're hanging out with everyone. The last part of every episode of Toys on Tap is you get to plug away and tell people where they can find you, how they can work with you, all those good things. And so you want to do the same run through that we did to introduce yourselves?
You should come to Five Points Festival June 7th and 8th. You can find us on the internet at fivepointsfest.com and on Instagram and Facebook and all the other socials at Five Points Fest. You can also find us at Clutter Magazine. You at American Gross, me at Clutter Maz, and Jesse.
Jesse can be found at Toy Pizza on Instagram. And also, if you want to get in on my 10-year-long narrative story of Knights of the Slice, you can do so at patreon.com/JesseDestasio. We'd love to have you.
Heck yeah. Thank you guys all for coming on Toys on Tap.
Thanks for having us.
This was fantastic.